1 Corinthians chapter 9, verses 1 to 27. You'll find it on page 1150 of the Pew Bible. Criticism can, in fact, almost break a pastor's heart. Listen to Paul. Am I not free? Am I not an apostle? Have I not seen Jesus the Lord? Are you not the result of my work in the Lord? Even though I may not be an apostle to others, surely I am to you, for you are the seal of my apostleship in the Lord. This is my defense to those who sit in judgment on me. Don't we have the right to food and drink? Don't we have the right to make a believing wife alongside with us, as do the other apostles and the Lord's brothers and Cephas? Or is it only I and Barnabas who must work for a living? Who serves as a soldier at his own expense? Who plants a vineyard and does not eat of its grapes? Who tends a flock and does not drink of the milk? Do I say this merely from a human point of view? Doesn't the law say the same thing? For it is written in the law of Moses, "Do not muzzle an ox while it is treading out the grain." Is it about oxen that God is concerned? Surely he says this for us, doesn't he? Yes, this was written for us. Because when the ploughman ploughs and the thresher threshes, they ought to do so in the hope of sharing in the harvest. If we have sown spiritual seed among you, is it too much if we reap a material harvest from you? If others have this right of support from you, shouldn't we have it all the more? But we do not use this right. On the contrary, we put up with anything rather than hinder the gospel of Christ. Don't you know that those who work in the temple get their food from the temple, and those who serve at the altar share in what is offered on the altar? In the same way, the Lord has commanded that those who preach the gospel should receive their living from the gospel. But I have not used any of these rights, and I am not writing this in the hope that you will do such things for me. I would rather die than have anyone deprive me of this boast. Yet when I preach the gospel, I cannot boast, for I am compelled to preach. Woe to me if I do not preach the gospel. If I preach voluntarily, I have a reward, if not voluntarily. I am simply discharging the trust committed to me. What then is my reward? Just this, that in preaching the gospel I may offer it free of charge, and so not make use of my rights in preaching it. Though I am free and belong to no man, I make myself a slave to everyone, to win as many as possible. To the Jews, I became like a Jew, to win the Jews. To those under the law, I became like one under the law, though I myself am not under the law, so as to win those under the law. To those not having the law, I became like one not having the law, though I am not free from God's law, but am under Christ's law, so as to win those not having the law. To the weak, I became weak, to win the weak. I have become all things to all men, so that by all possible means I might save some. I do all this for the sake of the gospel, that I may share in its blessing. Do you not know that in a race all the runners run, but only one gets the prize? Run in such a way as to get the prize. Everyone who competes in the games goes into strict training. They do it to get a crown that will not last, but we do it to get a crown that will last forever. Therefore, I do not run like a man running aimlessly. I do not fight like a man beating the air. No, I beat my body and make it my slave, so that after I have preached to others, I myself will not be disqualified for the prize.
So we considered the hard question last week. What are we willing to give up for the people sitting near us? And I deliberately went for not the person next to you, but perhaps the people sitting in front of you or behind you. What are you willing to give up for them? That was chapter 8. Chapter 9 expands the horizon. It keeps us on that hard question, but it asks, what are we willing to give up for those who aren't here today? For those who aren't yet believers? For those who are out there? What are we willing to give up? Paul is writing, remember, to this church in Corinth, a real church, a troubled church. He's writing to a church that's been divided, divided over which leader it follows, divided because of pride, and divided particularly, and we sort of see this more and more, because there seems to be this division between the haves and the have-nots, the more socially elite and the more socially deprived, the powerful and the weak. That's one of the phrases that Paul uses. Last week we were thinking of those who were puffed up in their knowledge, who'd look down on others. And Paul still has that in view. They've been looking down on him because although he claimed to be an apostle, he didn't receive money from them. And they thought that if you're a well-known speaker, then you'd surely have a high fee coming to speak in a place. It's the mark of being somebody good, is you'd get paid well. Was he a real apostle? He was being undermined. So Paul begins by defending, no, he is a real apostle. Begins by explaining that a gospel worker does need financial reward. But he's going to go on to show that what he has given up, what has he gone without for the sake of others. So we'll see this sort of the first point. Through the first half of this chapter, Paul is really drumming this in. Gospel workers, and he's talking about himself, has a right to financial reward. I counted up 17 rhetorical questions in these verses. You know, a rhetorical question, it's a question that doesn't need an answer because the answer's so obvious. And you just glance your eyes down over these verses, it's question after question after question, and it's a sort of technique to make a point. Am I not free? Am I not an apostle? Have I not seen the Lord Jesus? Are you not the result of my work in the Lord? Question, question, question. Obvious answer. Yes, he's free as a Christian. Yes, he's an apostle. Yes, he's seen the Lord Jesus. He was defending his apostleship. And the proof of me being an apostle, he says, is you, the church in Corinth. You've become a church. You've become Christians. And so when I need to call the defense for me being an apostle, I point to you. You're my defense, verse 3. I am an apostle. And as an apostle, I have rights. Verse 4, don't we have the right to food and drink? If I visit a place, I'm an apostle, don't I have the right to expect that people will look after me, will give me something to eat and drink in that place? Don't I have the right, verse 5, to take along a wife with me? She's a believer. Even though that might double the load for those who put me up or who support me financially, don't I have the right to do that? Just like the other apostles did, verse 5, just like Peter did, that's Cephas at the end of verse 5. I have rights. And then he goes on to really sort of drum this in. He uses illustration after illustration to show that I'm not speaking out of turn. This is right, what I'm saying. He speaks of the soldier and the farmer. He speaks of what God's law says, what happens in the temple. So follow with me, verse 7. Who serves as a soldier at his own expense? Well, nobody. It's a rhetorical question. Nobody. Soldier gets paid. Who plants a vineyard and does not eat its grapes? Well, nobody. Who tends a flock and does not drink the milk? Do I say this merely on human authority? Doesn't the law say the same thing? He turns to God's law. It's written that in the law of Moses, do not muzzle an ox while it's treading out the grain. There was even animal rights in the Old Testament law. Now here's the oxen working hard. It's probably walking round in a circle to turn the millstone. You know, don't gag it so it can't eat what falls on the floor. It's working for you. Allow the animal to eat while it's working. Is it about the oxen that God is concerned? Was it all about animal rights? No, he's making the point, surely. It's for us. Those who work in the fields, on the harvest, can share in the harvest, verse 10. So verse 11, if we've sown spiritual seed among you, is it too much if we reap a material harvest from you? And what about in the temple, verse 13? Don't you know that those who serve in the temple get their food from the temple? And those who serve at the altar share in what's offered on the altar. In the same way, the Lord has commanded that those who preach the gospel should receive their living from the gospel. Paul, as an apostle, had a right to financial rewards. That's what he's getting across. And that shapes our thinking, hasn't it, as a church? I'm a beneficiary of that. I get paid by the church to preach the gospel. That shaped our thinking when it comes to missionaries, to people that we've sent out to other places. We financially support people. And for many of them, that need is growing, and we need to keep thinking, how are we supporting them? Are we supporting them enough? Are we muzzling the oxen or letting the oxen feed? Well, my guess is that so far, so good. This chapter, chapter 9, we're sort of nodding along. We get the point. But the second half gets a bit more uncomfortable. Because Paul says, look, here's a right I had. I'm an apostle. I'm up here, as it were, in some ways. I had the right to financial reward. But I didn't take up that right. So, secondly, we see this. Paul was willing to give up his rights. He was willing to give up his rights, first of all, for the sake of the gospel. We skipped over that a little bit in verse 12. But we did not use this right halfway through verse 12. On the contrary, we put up with anything rather than hinder the gospel of Christ. And then verse 15, but I have not used any of these rights. And I'm not writing this in the hope you'll do such things for me. No, I've given up these rights. Why? Well, particularly so that he can preach the gospel for free. He's really keen to do that. That's what he's stressing in verses 15 to 17. I have a reward. What then, verse 18, is my reward? Just this, that in preaching the gospel I may offer it free of charge. And not make full use of my rights as a preacher of the gospel. Paul worked in manual labour. When he was in Corinth, he was a tent maker. He worked. That's how he got his money to buy his food to survive in Corinth. He was a worker. In a lot of Greek thought at that time, working, well, it was, you know, you didn't really want to work if you could help it. You sort of tried to escape having to work. And then you would progress up the social ladder to those who didn't need to work anymore. That's partly why Paul was looked down on. But he wanted the gospel to be available for free. He didn't want to confuse the fact that the gospel was a good news message of grace. God freely offered to forgive you. God freely offered you heaven, as we were thinking of earlier. It's all free. It's not something to earn. It's not something to pay for. And we can easily get confused as people who are sort of wired to want to do things to earn our salvation. And Paul wanted to get rid of any confusion. We've sort of gone through a similar thought process in this church. We used to pass around offering bags in the church for an offering. Now, we want to give our money to God, to his work, but we don't want to confuse the issue. We don't want it to look like we're buying our salvation. We're paying this to keep God sweet. So we've got offering boxes on the walls instead. So we're not passing bags around. We still want to give, but we don't want to confuse. And Paul was keen for the same thing here. He wanted to be able to preach this gospel of grace, and to emphasize that this was something that came free. Now that's quite tough, isn't it? That's quite challenging. Maybe not so much for you, but it certainly is for me. Am I willing to do this job for free? Am I willing to go back to teaching to support myself and my family so that I can just share the gospel for free? That is a challenge. It's happening more and more, I think, around the country that pastors to minister in certain places are having to be bivocational. They're having to have a job and be a pastor. It certainly happens for missionaries around the world to be able to be in that place to share with those people, to have a job and to be a missionary. Are we willing to think that way ourselves? Paul was, for the sake of the gospel. Secondly, he was willing to give up his rights for the sake of the unbeliever. He describes himself as being a slave or a servant to everybody, verse 19. Though I'm free, I belong to no one, I have made myself a slave to everyone, to win as many as possible. And he gives examples of different groups of people that he's been a slave to, that he's become like. The first is extraordinary. He says, verse 20, to the Jews I became like a Jew. That is extraordinary. Paul was a Jew, became a Christian, but in his thinking he had to do something quite deliberate to become like a Jew again, to be able to share the gospel with them. Not to compromise the message, but to live alongside, to be able to share the good news of Jesus. And then he widens it from the Jew to those who were under the law. Not just Jews, but also Gentile God-fearers, people who believed in the God of the Old Testament. He became also like those who were not under the law, verse 21. The Gentiles, living alongside them. Now this is, I think, familiar to many of us, these verses. It only struck me this week that there's something in here that I think is really hard for us. Look at how Paul describes these things. Verse 20. To the Jews I became like a Jew to win the Jews. To those under the law I became like one under the law, so as to win those under the law. Verse 21. To those not having the law I became like one not having the law. Verse 22, there's no like. To the weak, I became like the weak. No, to the weak, I became weak to win the weak. And then there's not the counterbalance that we long for and love, especially living in Cheam. Where's the one about the strong or the rich? To the rich, I became like the rich to win the rich. Oh, if only this was there, then it would justify some of my decisions and my choices and how I live and what I do, but it's missing. To the strong, I became like the strong to win the strong, but it's not there. No, the look is downwards. The look is to the weak. To the weak, I became weak. I became weak to win the weak. Now this is really strong. Paul is really pushing this. Verses 1 to 14, rhetorical questions. I have the right. I have the right. I'm an apostle. I have the right. Verse 22. But to the weak I became weak. Who's he remind us of? It's Jesus, isn't it, coming through? Jesus, God's Son. God. I have the right. I have the right. I have the right. Born in a stable. Giving up everything. To the weak, I became weak. Who did Jesus hang out with? Well, he was accused of being a glutton and a drunkard, wasn't he? Because of who he spent time with. He was accused of spending time with people who were unrighteous, who were sinners. To the weak, I became weak. Why? To win the weak. What a challenge. What a challenge for the people in Corinth. What a challenge for the people in Cheam. I've become all things to all people, so that by all possible means I might save some. I do this all for the sake of the gospel, verse 23, that I may share in its blessings. He's willing to give up his rights for the sake of the gospel, for the sake of the unbeliever. Was this easy? Easy to go without? Easy to say no? Easy to give things up? No, this was really hard, thirdly. This was really tough to do. Corinth had a biannual games, like the Olympics. It was a companion of the Olympics games, the Isthmian games. It's really hard to say. But think Olympics, old school. Kind of athletics, gladiatorial things going on. Athletes. People in Corinth knew about athletes. They had them all turn up in town every 2 years for the games. Paul uses that image. Verse 24, do you not know that in a race all the runners run, but only one gets the prize? Run in such a way as to get the prize. Everyone who competes in the games goes into strict training. Think of those who did the marathon last week. They didn't just pitch up at the start line. Hey, I'm going to give this a go. I used to be quite good running at school. No, to run the London Marathon, you need to train. You've got to put in the hours. You have to get up in the cold, wet, miserable winter mornings and train. You've got to be motivated to do that. It takes effort to do that. Everyone who competes in the games goes into strict training. They do it to get a crown that will not last. Literally, they were given this crown of, I think it was kind of celery leaves, this sort of laurel on their head. Literally a crown that would not last. You know, these flowers are beautiful, stunning today, aren't they? Give them a week. If we come back next week and no one touches them, what are they going to look like? It's a bit like the crown that these athletes went for. That's what they got. What do we have held out in front of us? What's our reward? What's our prize? Well, Paul says, we do it to get a crown that will last forever. Verse 25. Therefore, I do not run like someone running aimlessly. I do not fight like a boxer beating the air. You know, imagine that last night, big fight. No, there's an intensity. There's an intentionality. Now I strike, verse 27, I strike a blow to my body and make it my slave, so that after I've preached to others, I myself will not be disqualified for the prize. Giving up these things, this is really tough. Giving up the money, giving up the status, giving up all the opportunities that were before him as an apostle. You know, he could have cruised from town to town, told people what they wanted to hear, lined his pockets with the rewards. And sometimes it was tempting. Because we all like comfort, don't we? We all like that security that a little more money would give us. Just a little bit more. And then I won't have to. Or just a little treat here. Because I've earned it. I deserve it. It's my rights. And as a Christian, you know, it doesn't matter, does it, where I live or what I wear or where I eat or what I eat? You know, we're not under law anymore. We're under grace. So I have freedom as a Christian. But what am I willing to give up for the sake of the gospel? What am I willing to give up for the sake of the unbeliever? Now, how we apply this, I think, just depends on our own circumstances. But we must feel uncomfortable, I think, going away from here. Not guilty. It's very easy for me to make you feel guilty as a preacher. I don't want to do that today. But I think all of us ought to feel uncomfortable, especially the majority of us who live in Cheam. Corinth, very similar. We ought to feel uneasy. What have I given up? What could I give up? Yeah, for me, it's direct. Would I give up my salary for the gospel? Would I give up my luxury items to support a missionary a bit more? To give money to the FIEC training fund to train up the next generation of gospel preachers? To give up my time to serve? To get to the marriage course? to spend time socially with neighbours and colleagues? Will I give up my social status, where I live, safety of my kids' schooling? Here's one. I'd say this very gently. Some of us, in terms of where we move and where we live, those choices are big choices. And some of us, we get to the point where maybe the right next move is to go to sheltered accommodation or a nursing home. And that's often talked through as giving up a freedom, giving up, well, rights. Would I do that for the sake of the gospel? To go and live amongst others, literally in a home, and be alongside so I can share the gospel with them. Do it gladly, not easily. I might have to beat my body to do it. But is it part of my thinking that I might do this for the sake of the gospel? Who will I spend time with? Who will I become like without changing the message? Well, here's some questions just to ponder. These are ones for you just to take away and to think through perhaps later on today. First of all, who won you? That's Paul's phrase through this. He's doing this to win. That's a lovely phrase, isn't it? I'm doing this to win people. Win people for Christ. Who won you? Who was it who played a major part in you understanding about Jesus, coming to trust in Jesus? What do you think they might have given up to do that? Who won you? Perhaps even this afternoon, just stop and thank God for that person or group of people or number of people over a number of years who impacted your life. Who are you winning? Who are you pursuing, trying to win for the gospel? As we heard at the very first notice for the men's breakfast about John who wasn't there. Who are you winning? What rights are you willing to give up for the sake of the gospel? Here's the harder question, actually. What right are you not willing to give up? We're going to push harder on that next week. If you don't want to feel uncomfortable in church, don't come next week. Next week, Paul pushes us even further. What are we not willing to give up for the sake of the gospel? And are you willing to become weak? Not like the weak, but become weak, vulnerable, less financially secure, less socially mobile. Boy, it's hard, isn't it? But that's the challenge of this chapter. Driven by this conviction of Paul's that the gospel was everything, salvation was everything, that I might win some, that I might save some, I was willing, said Paul.